I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host for 2 hours a day, broadcasting live from the Mack Hike of Flowood Studios. Today's Friday. That means next hour we'll start off with False Flag Friday. I've got a very an interesting clip about what's going on with Ukraine from Scott Ritter on the Judge Napolitano show. If you are looking to get some actual news, people who understand what's happening in the Ukraine conflict, which is not our media, which is telling you if we just send another $50 billion to Ukraine, they've got this one in the bag. Not a problem. Scott Ritter is on the Judge Napolitano show. I got a couple of clips about that, and then some other foreign policy stuff. The blowback, the world is—they're aligning against us, not because they want to come take our stuff, not because they hate us for our freedoms. No, it's because the United States government has been the bully of the world for the past 70 years, and people have just about had enough. We'll take a look at that. From the perspective of a couple different countries there. And then we will finish up, as we always do, with This Week on the Crazy Train. I've got plenty of sound bites of insanity gripping this country and the world at large. First hour here, we might get to a little bit of cryptocurrency stuff. I think I'm going to have Stephen Utroska on next week. We're going to talk about that. He's kind of my crypto guy. I've always been more of a gold guy. And the gold people have really been frustrated over the past, really, 14 years. After gold had its big run during the financial crisis, it has just sat stagnant. With all the bad economic news, the gold bugs, it's a very frustrating place to be. I can tell you, as they just do not understand, even in a time of massive inflation, that's usually when gold shines, pun intended, and it just hasn't done a whole lot. But if you had decided between Bitcoin and gold a year ago, I think you may be down 4% in gold and down 75% in cryptocurrencies right now. So the old relic of a metal is certainly holding up better these days than the shiny new technology coin. So we have Stephen on next week. This story about FTX, I don't think it's going away. And it's not because just of the criminality, but I think that it is starting to tip over some other dominoes in some of these other exchanges. I think we've seen four or five now failures of other exchanges and other crypto companies that were heavily invested or had assets with FTX. So this thing is going to ripple across the crypto world and has some risk of tipping over some dominoes in the financial system itself. I believe the cryptocurrency universe has lost about $2 trillion. It's about a third of what it was a year ago. That's a lot of money. Only people who have lost more money than that are companies like Facebook, some of the tech companies. So it's actually a pretty big story. So we'll continue to follow it and report on it. Crypto's interesting. The way this is playing out, the timing is interesting. We have the failure of the second largest cryptocurrency exchange, and the next day, I believe this is the chronology, the very next day, about 12 banks, including the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, HSBC, Bank of America, they're testing out this new government coin, digital dollar, they're calling it. Very interesting at a time where it looks like a lot of people are going to lose a lot of money in the decentralized Bitcoin world and cryptocurrency world. The government may, and they're doing a 3-month study, so by the first couple of months of next year, they will come out and tell us what a success the digital dollar was and that we will have found out how dangerous, they will tell us, how dangerous cryptocurrencies outside of government control are. The timing seems coincidental. And as a coincidence theorist, I'm just saying. So this the rippling of this massive failure, it's I believe there's like a million people that might have had accounts with FTX. You know, one of the things that I've thought was going to happen, the government all loves to fearmonger people. Now, the crypto universe is, it's the Wild West. You have to do your due diligence. You have to do some homework. And a lot of people did not do any homework on FTX. I think I've got it in this week on the Crazy Train, the interview with the CEO of Alameda Research that was the one of the people involved in FTX. This girl, who sounds like she probably should be in the 10th grade somewhere. So you've got to do your own due diligence. But I've always thought, and I've been wrong so far, that when we have the next financial wipeout, when people's 401ks are decimated, the government's going to come in and tell you, the market's just too risky for you. We need to take all that money, all that cash out of your 401k. We're going to give you essentially like a government annuity. I just don't believe that as we see our financial fortunes in this country wane, when they have finally indebted us to an unsustainable level, and when we are poised to pay about $1.2 trillion in interest on the national debt, that becomes pretty problematic for a government trying to fund things like Ukraine, the warfare, and the welfare state. They're going to look at that big pot of retirement cash, and I don't think they're going to be able to keep their hands off of it. They're going to confiscate your retirement funds in the guise of protecting you and give you something that is, air quotes here in the studio, guaranteed. That's just that's been a theory of mine, but I'll tell you, I've had that theory for about 15 years now. Has not turned out to be true. But predicting criminality of the U.S. federal government is, it's usually not a losing bet. We'll just see if that one comes true. First hour to this hour, if you want, I've set up this week with my content. Perfect time for Fight Club Friday, the number 601-879-0002. I have set up a couple of things this weekend. Trump made his announcement that he was going to run for president, I believe it was on Tuesday night, and I came on and said that Donald Trump is poised to destroy the Republican Party, and he may be a purposeful plant by the globalists to sideline conservatives for the next 25 years after the Republican Party. As bad as it is, obviously I'm no fan of the Republican Party, but it is at least some level of resistance to the globalists and the biggest wackadoodles on the left. So I'd hate to see it sidelined. I believe Donald Trump is the plant to make that happen. So if you want to fight about that, and then I at length yesterday took down his idea of death penalty for drug dealers. I laid out five good reasons that maybe you should think for a nanosecond before you cheer that on. One of those, most particularly, the fact that he got this policy from the communist dictator Xi Jinping. He wants to roll out communist dictatorship government drug policy here in the United States. So if you want to fight about it, I also threw in yesterday that if you are somebody who supports the drug war in its current form or Trump's idea of killing drug dealers by midnight that night, that was his point. Quick trial. You're accused of dealing drugs. Quick trial that day. Death that night. This is his idea to ramp up the war on drugs. And I said, if you believe that that is an accurate thing, please, for the love of God, quit calling yourself a constitutionalist. Because the Constitution does not anywhere in it, and if you want to call in this morning and tell me where I'm missing it, nothing in the Constitution tells me what I can or cannot put into my own body. And yet we fight this unconstitutional and disastrous failure war on drugs for 50 years now. Trump wants to ramp it up. So there's plenty to fight about, but I'm about to pull a switcheroo on you. How about this? My defense of Donald Trump. I think this shows you I'm a very objective guy. There's a story out there right now that they are, they're investigating the Trump Organization. And apparently yesterday, according to, I think this is CBS, the CFO, the Chief Financial Officer, Alan Weisselberg, testified yesterday in court in New York. Weiselberg said Donald Trump, or at times Eric Trump or Donald Trump Jr., signed checks to pay up to $100,000 for private school tuition for Weiselberg's grandchildren. Weiselberg said he then instructed the company's controller to deduct the $100,000 from his salary, allowing him to report a smaller income. Copies of some of the checks signed by the Trumps have been shown in court. Weiselberg said the first time Trump signed a tuition check, Weiselberg said to him, quote, "Don't forget, I'm going to pay you back for this," unquote. The payback, he said, was his salary reduction. I guess I should read the opening line of this story on Mediaite. Reporting on the CBS report, says former President Donald Trump and two of his children had a role in a massive fraud scheme, testified former Trump Organization CFO Alan Weiselberg. This is massive tax fraud. In defense of Donald Trump and Eric Trump and Donald Trump Jr., in my personal opinion, and I believe that the Trumps might want to investigate libertarianism. In my personal opinion, the Trumps can pay their employees however the hell they want to pay them. They can barter for their position. If we lived in a truly free country, then there would not be any government dictates on how you can compensate your employees. The government sets these rules so they make sure they drain you for every single nickel of federal income taxes. And you're listening to the only show that tells you the federal income tax is unconstitutional and the rate should be zero. So people may not like my attacks on the IRS. You may think it's unpatriotic that, Mike, how could we possibly fund a federal government if we didn't have individual income tax? And I point out to you that most people did not pay any income tax until after World War II. Number one, we went for almost 200 years, about 160, 170 years without a nickel of individual income tax. And the government collects trillions of dollars in other fees. So we could be able to do without it. So maybe the Trumps should investigate libertarianism when it comes to tax policy. But the idea that they are going to come after them because they part of this guy's compensation was paying for his grandchildren's private school, it's none of the government's business how the Trumps compensate their own employees. This is how out of control our government is. And this is one of the reasons that you don't want a tax system like we have, because it is full of booby traps. You know, yesterday I talked about this ridiculous war on drugs and the idea of executing drug dealers. Boy, that sounds great to everybody on the face of it. We have a caricature of a drug dealer, and they harm lives, and so we just go ahead and start killing them all. Funny thing is, you know, there's a lot of white-collar drug dealers out there. I've known these people. They just deal a little bit of weed, maybe some coke to their friends and business associates. They're out there. I don't know. They really deserve death. But just like I laid out yesterday, how long do you think it will take before the Patriots are targeted with drug charges and executed at sunset under a law like Donald Trump's proposing? But the tax code is exactly the same way. It can just be used at whim to implicate anybody. They actually brag about it being the thing they could get Al Capone with. Al Capone was obviously involved in a ton of crime because that was back during prohibition of alcohol. He was murdering people. He had set up gangs. He was corrupting public officials. It was complete gang warfare. But they got him on the tax code. I don't know. I've seen a lot of information about Al Capone. How inept was the government in not being able to find any crimes on him, so they had to rely on the IRS to go in there and get him? But this tax code is just a booby trap across the board. Anybody that they want to target at any time, they can take out their pound of flesh and put them in their place. The Trumps should be left alone on this issue. The government should have no business whatsoever in how they compensate an employee. I say that the Trumps should learn about libertarianism and what the philosophy is in our regard for personal income taxes, because if there were no personal income taxes, this wouldn't be an issue. They would be completely free to pay for school tuition. It is kind of nuts, isn't it? This guy is paying $100,000 to send his grandchildren to a private school. $100,000 a year for a private school seems a tad excessive. But on Twitter, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez AOC, had tweeted this out. If only we had taxed the rich, maybe none of this would have happened. This was a tweet from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. The Libertarian responded to her, Libertarian Party. It was short and succinct. The Libertarian Party tweeted back at Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and they said, everyone's fair share of taxes is 0%. Yeah, that's one of the reasons I'm prone to be behind that party rather than the party of you're going to pay us 28% on the Democrat side or the Republicans who come in like heroes and tell us we're only going to steal 25% of your money. I'll stick with the Libertarian Party at zero. Be right back.
I went home with a waitress the way I always do.
All right, we are back. The crypto stuff is very interesting. I know there's a lot of people who are still not involved in cryptocurrencies. A lot of people do not understand them still. There's not been widespread adoption, but I do think they are something very important. As a libertarian, I really applaud the idea of a decentralized currency that we might use. Now, I separate that utility of it, freedom of it. Libertarians are very fond of cryptocurrencies. I separate that from the idea of assigning it some arbitrary value, like even 16,000 now or 70,000 a year ago. That doesn't make any sense to me. That is basically, to me, you're buying something with the idea that somebody else will pay you more for it someday. There's no intrinsic value to this thing, even though they talk about the fact there's only a certain number of them out there. That's still notwithstanding, there is no intrinsic value of these coins other than the faith other people place in them and the amount that they will pay for them. This way leads tears as far as as an investment at this point. That may change. But I got a caller online with me, a guy named Dave, and we've talked a little bit over the past few days as the NFT blow up has been talking. And he's sounds like a younger guy, more hip than me, more understanding than me. And we're going to talk a little bit about cryptocurrency, what he sees the future of it going to be. And also we're going to talk a little bit about NFTs, which I've talked about originally as just one of the most bizarre things I'd ever seen. So, Dave, I appreciate you coming on.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. No problem.
All right. So are you you're a crypto investor?
I actually am not personally, but I've definitely been watching it since the beginning. Yeah. I was in high school when it like really first started coming out, and that's when I heard about it. That's when I started researching, and that's when I was telling everybody about it and watching it to see what happens with it.
Yeah, yeah, that's kind of been the same thing I've done, and I'm kicking myself. I remember I was in the middle of a very costly legal battle, divorce. And I remember thinking to myself, this was 2010. I was going to buy a couple hundred bucks of Bitcoin just as a libertarian. I thought it was interesting to support it and see what happened. I was kicking myself about 10 years later that I had not done such a thing because it was sub $1 at the time when I was going to buy 200 bucks worth. But I also know that I would not have been smart enough. If it had gone from $1 to $100, I would have sold. I don't think I would have been along for the ride to 10,000 its initial peak. But
when I was in high school, I was trying to tell my dad about it, and I was breaking it down. I was like, yo, this is the future, yada, yada, yada. He was like, and he tried to bring in some knowledge, some old school knowledge, like, you know, not everything that's on the internet is gold, you know. So, and he kind of steered me away, and that's when I was like, all right, cool, didn't invest. And yeah, it hit 40,000, and I was like, well, hot dang.
Yeah.
There were $45 a coin when I was looking at them. That's.
Yeah, it was quite a gold rush, and some people made some money. Let's just cover this real quick. I don't see any intrinsic value in a cryptocurrency. As far as I see the utility of it, I understand the value of the blockchain as a technology, but it's pretty widely available for pretty much anybody who wants to implement it. But the idea of the cost of a Bitcoin being any particular dollar amount, you know, you can look at a company and say, this is how much they make each year. This is what their expenses are. This is how much their profit is. And so, you know, based on that, this is what the stock is valued at right now. And they expect to do XY business next year. And they own this amount of real estate. And this is the, you know, there's a, there's a fundamental reason for a lot of stock prices, even though some of them go bizarre. But with cryptocurrency, there is just nothing I can hang my hat on that says that this thing is worth anything today or tomorrow, any particular value. Why?
The only thing that I can really say to give to that would be two things. And because you're right, it's not tied into anything because it's a computer-generated code, right? But you just have to look at the two main components that go into computers. And that's, precious metals like gold and palladium and silver and all that. And then the energy cost. So a lot of people don't consider the energy cost, but Bitcoin transactions are extremely expensive energy-wise.
Right.
Like one transaction is like $173 on like an energy bill. For just one Bitcoin transaction.
Because the computers on the blockchain have got to register this transaction. It all takes a tremendous amount of computing power to keep this general ledger.
Right. And people don't realize like the amount of computing power you need. So take a computer, right? Like a regular desktop, okay? That computer is never going to be strong enough. You need a graphics card. So the graphics card is like three CPUs, and it's normally about like a foot long, 4 inches deep. People have computers with 10 to 100,000 of those attached to like a rig. So it's not like your regular PC or, they do it another way too. Is like they make these games on phones, right? And you see a bunch of ads for these super cheap, cheesy games, but you play them because they're addicting. Half of those games have a background app running while you're on the app. And the phone computer, right, is used in conjunction with other computers to calculate the information. So, like, they're stealing your computer to use it for Bitcoin transactions.
Right. They're piggybacking on your activity and using your computer to help them do these things.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. So they're stealing your power, and they're using you to – they're basically just pimping you out in another form. It's really kind of crazy just on the energy side of things.
Well, and the idea of that, which I kind of understand, one of the reasons that gold is valuable is because it's in a finite amount as far as what's circulating in physical form, and to go get more requires effort, as opposed to a fiat currency like we have with the dollar, where somebody has the magic computer at the Fed – and they can just sit down and type out $10 billion and hit send, and it just automatically appears somewhere. So the comparison between Bitcoin and gold is that it does take some effort, and you've got to expend some energy to create, to make more, to mine more Bitcoin. So I understand that. But that almost seems like a flaw of this thing, too.
It definitely is. And that's the thing, too, is like you said, there's a limited amount of, gold on this planet that you can harvest. And technically, in quotations, you can't see my fingers, but I'm in quotations. Technically,
air quotes here in the
has
studio.
The same thing. Right, exactly. Because they say there's a limited amount, but they also have a half-life. So essentially, they try and say that it'll last forever because for at least Bitcoin, it's like every 4 years, the amount of coins remaining, like, it gets cut in half to what's available to, like, be mined. It's a weird, there's a certain equation that you, go over in biology and physics that it kind of goes by fours. I think it's, the logarithm equation or something like that, and it's supposed to be, the natural number or something like that. And that's what Bitcoin and, all that crypto is based off of.
Well, I think this is one of the interesting things. I know a lot of people invest in Bitcoin. A lot of people are familiar with it, or in cryptocurrencies in general. And this is one of those things where it just gets to a technical level where very few people understand it. And the one thing that's been interesting about cryptocurrency to me is – most times I can spot the smart people, and I'll give them more credence in their argument. There are very smart people on both sides of cryptocurrency being the greatest thing ever and cryptocurrency being a Ponzi scheme. So when you've got really intelligent people on both sides of the thing, I kind of have to adopt a wait and see. We'll see who's right.
I really do think it's a mix of both, because as of right now, it's such an experimental stage because it's so open source. There's no real legal requirements on anything. There's no rules about it. There's no countries have signed off on it. So, in my opinion, this isn't a legitimized thing yet. There's no guarantee to your money. There's no nothing. There's it's literally the wild west.
It's a speculative asset, and I mean it's got a you know it's got a Beanie Baby vibe to it. Although I think that this is something obviously more. There's some more utility to this than there is to Beanie Babies. We don't have a whole lot more time, but tell us. I'm going to play some clips when I get back, what Musk is considering, what apparently the path of Twitter is when it comes to technologies. And one of the biggest things he looks like he's heading towards is it's going to be a payment platform. What do you think the future of cryptocurrency? Is it going to stay this rebellious, decentralized, power-to-the-people currency, or is the government going to come in, either co-opt it or outlaw it?
You know, that's a good question. I think it's going to vary per country, but I think some countries are going to have to just go ahead and add it because I literally saw this morning a country is going digital. And I think it's some country in like the Polynesian area or something like that. I forgot the name of it, but it, like a country is going digital. With everything staying on the internet, it's kind of the only route you can go. But all I'm going to say is it's just not in full effect yet, and it hasn't really been commercialized to a sense where people have to use it. But once we get to that point, everyone's going to have to just adopt to it, in my opinion.
Well, we better run away from any idea of going completely digital and not getting rid of gold or hard currency or anything else. That is going to be a trap we will not easily escape. You can still barter, but you want to talk about a pain in the butt.
Yeah, because like with power outages, that's a huge thing.
They've
already started testing. It's just it's such a thing that's just up in the air. It's scary. It's wild.
I can think of 50 things that are wrong with going to an entirely digital currency. And my biggest thing is that I believe that governments, particularly the U.S. government, which is the financial boss of the world, unfortunately. But governments around the world can come in and crush this thing. And everyone says, well, they can't stop it. I mean, individuals can own cryptocurrencies. The government can't, you know, it's anonymous. They don't know that you have it, whatever. The government will scare enough people out of it that there will just be such marginal adoption, maybe mostly in black markets, which at that point I would support. But I think they'll scare people out of it. So the future of it is so up in the air. I think there's a whole lot of trap doors on crypto right now.
Yeah, that's exactly why I haven't invested in it, because at the end of the day, the money's not guaranteed. It could drop at any time, and there's no protection. It's the wild, wild west. And if you get in, a lot of times you can't even get out because what was that one company? I think it was Acorns or something that forced people to buy, but you couldn't sell.
Right, yeah.
Or something like that. That's crazy. Like, I would never if I – like, what? Like that's just wild. So
I think people are taking risk on this thing. They should understand it's completely speculative. Regardless of what anybody on CNBC tells you, that it's going to be $100,000 in a year. They certainly said that last year too. It's completely speculative, but they are going to use this loss by people as the reason that the government, with all of its loving arms, is this is how they'll pose it to us. Well, we've just seen all these people lose all this money. We need to come in and either regulate this thing to death or replace it with a central bank digital currency. We love the technology.
There needs to be one because there's so many. There's hundreds, and they make new ones every day.
Yeah.
They're developing a new one tomorrow. It's like, all right, you got to pick one, choose one, make it work, and then we can talk about it. But right now, it's too much up in the air.
Yeah, I think the last I had heard, there were something like 1,600 different cryptocurrencies trading on some of these exchanges. It's just, it's been the Wild West. Well, we'll see. But, Dave, I appreciate you calling in, and we'll see how this pans out. I do want maybe next week call back in. We'll get together, and I want to talk about NFTs. I'm out of time today, but I want to talk about these NFT things with you sometime. You and I might have a little bit of a different approach to them, but I think it's very interesting nonetheless.
Yes, sir. Hey, well, you have an excellent day, and I appreciate you for having me on.
All right. Thanks, man. Good to talk to you.
No problem.
All right. Bye-bye. Well, I think it's very interesting. Look, this is one of those things. I think younger generations need to look to older generations for some things, your lack of experience. And there's a lot of things where older generations need to listen to younger generations that understand these things better than us. I'm really just almost on the sideline of cryptocurrency. Too much unknowns right now, and I'm too suspicious of government power coming in and crushing it. Hopefully I'm wrong there. Be right back.
Well, it would have been, could have been worse than you would ever know. Only that
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, broadcasting from the Mac Hike of Flowood Studios. I think people are interested in what's going on at Twitter. Obviously, there's free speech implications there. I have expressed my reservations that Elon Musk is going to be a savior, although he does do interesting things and says a lot of the right things. I'm just sick of people saying the right things and then finding out they did the wrong thing. I found an interview with Elon Musk and what his plans for Twitter are. It's interesting to talk about this today. Apparently, the news is, and I saw it first reported on Zero Hedge, that a bunch of Twitter employees, there was some leaked memo of something, and a bunch of them just bolted. The offices are actually closed today. I did check. Twitter's up. You know, this is probably one of these companies that could have been run by six nerds giving them Red Bull and pizza. Instead, because there was so much phony money sloshing around from the Federal Reserve, they just took in billions and billions and billions of dollars and spent it however they wanted to. This company, I don't know if it's ever been profitable, but I did see that last year it didn't make any money. Elon Musk just paid something like, he just paid $44 billion for a company, and I believe their revenue last year was less than $1 billion. I could be wrong. I believe that's what I read. But it certainly, the idea that it's worth $44 billion at the time Musk bought it is absurd to me. But look, maybe the guy knows what he's doing. So here are kind of what his plans are for Twitter, just so people kind of maybe know what's inside his head, how he makes this as a viable business.
Conversation around Vine, and can you just talk about some of the stuff you're really excited about from a product perspective, aside from, you know, we've already talked about subscriptions, but like what else? You know, and you've said to me in the, or to the team, like to the organization before about video and all those kinds of things. So talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, video is definitely an era where Twitter has been historically weak. And it is an era that we're going to invest in tremendously. And this is, you know, I did ask people what their interest was in Vine. Not that we would want to resurrect Vine in its original state, but just would they want a Vine-like thing, reimagined for the future. And people were excited about that. One of the things, if somebody does become sort of a paid blue verified, is that they will be able to initially use or download 10 minutes of high-def video, which we'll be expanding to 42 minutes soon, and then several hours as we sort of fix a bunch of stuff on the back-end servers. There are a bunch of fundamental technology architecture changes that are needed at Twitter in order to support a significant video. So we've got to make those core software upgrades and server upgrades in order to support a large amount of video, but we are absolutely going to do that.
So this was obviously designed to be a competitor to YouTube, to any of the other video platforms. And I'll tell you what I hear when I hear that stuff, though. Man, you think about where we were 20 years ago as a species, as a human species. Maybe 30 years ago before we didn't even have 24-hour news. You got about an hour of news a day. I mean, a couple of times a day. You could catch it in the morning. You could catch it in the afternoon. Maybe a late night, nightline type thing. The rest of your day was spent living your life, interacting with other people. Some people chose to read a book. Now, we did watch a lot of television. There's no doubt about that, which I guess is really the same as video. But the amount of exposure we have to screens and being sucked into this digital world, I don't think we've evolved yet to be able to handle this. I believe this is one of the reasons for all the agitation in our society, particularly as everybody gets kind of in their bubbles. People will only watch videos of things mostly that reinforce what they already know. And that's not really the case for me. A lot of times I'll look at things that I see a headline and it's an opposing view, and I'll read it because I'm curious to know what they're saying. And sometimes I find something of value in it that I didn't ever consider before. But, man, this is a lot of information coming at us. And our kids. I mean, there was a time, I guess I'm going to sound old now, but as a kid, you woke up in the morning, you had a little bit of breakfast, maybe you watched a cartoon. They weren't allowed in my house. TV was not a morning activity except for Saturday mornings. But then you went outside and you built forts and you rode your bike and you did stuff. I mean, I was crisscrossing Northeast Jackson on my bike all day long at the swimming pool doing all these other things. And now you wake up and the first thing they do is they check their phone and they go straight into this digital gulag and they stay there for hours and hours and hours a day. I don't think we can handle all of this information. I'm as guilty as anybody else. I've got to spend a lot of time on the internet to get ready for this show, and I'm interested in things that are going on around the world, but I'm also watching workout videos. And I spend my time in digital stuff too, but I just another platform with 45-minute video in the next few months on Twitter. You got to juggle that with all your YouTube channels you subscribe to, and I mean, man, this seems like a lot of stuff. But when I come back, I'm going to take a quick break and then come back. The ultimate goal for Twitter, it appears, the way he's going to make money, this is going to be the new verified, you are you, we know everything about you and what you're doing with your money. It sounds like this is going to be a payment platform with a social feature rather than what it is right now, which is basically just social media and communications. But they're going to add a payment feature to this. I'll let Elon Musk explain it when we come back. Yeah.
It's been a ride. I guess I had to go to that place to get to this one. Now some of you might still be in that place. If you're trying to get out, just follow me.
All right, only got a couple minutes left in this hour, so let's go ahead and get into this. This is what Musk, this is another thing that he's planning for Twitter. What is Twitter 2.0 going to be?
We also need to enable monetization of content for creators. And if we provide creators with the ability to post what they create on our platform and to monetize it at a rate that is at least competitive with the alternatives, then of course creators will natively post their content on Twitter. Why not? So those are kind of no-brainer moves. Also keyed off of verification, paid verified, is now we know that this is someone who has been authenticated by the payment system, by the sort of conventional payment system. Now we can say like, okay, you've got a balance on your account. Do you want to send money to someone else within Twitter? And maybe we pre-populate their account with and say, okay, we're going to give you, you know, $10, and you can send it anywhere within Twitter. Then if you want to get it out of the system, then, okay, well, now you need to send it to a bank account. So now attach an authenticated bank account to your Twitter account. Then the next step would be let's offer an extremely compelling money market account, so you get extremely high yield on your balance. Then why not move cash into Twitter? Great. That sounds like a good idea. And then add debit cards, checks, and whatnot. And I think it will be make the system as useful as possible. The more useful and entertaining it is, the more people will use it.
I'll tell you, that seems to me to be a brilliant business plan. And I'm going to get into my paranoia in just a second. And you can decide for yourself whether or not it's justified. We already have Venmo, your bank. You got a debit card. We're paying stuff online constantly. Obviously, we all have a ton of digital financial transactions already. Cash App, other ones that I don't even know. I use, if you've got a kid in college, you know about Venmo or Cash App or something because you use it several times a month. Usually in just a one-way pattern. I don't know if you've ever noticed this. I make the joke. I absolutely love my children, but it does feel like sometimes every single text I get costs me about $250 on average. But anyway, so we already have these digital payment things. It is convenient. I won't even say I don't like it. It sure does make that easy. I remember having to, kids have got such a grift now. They can text you something. They don't have to confront you voice to voice. They can text you something and then just get money within a couple of minutes. For me, it'd take me 3 days to work up the courage to call my parents to tell them I'd burned through all my money again and they'd need to send me a check. So these things already exist. But there is something about the idea of tying your political speech, which is a large part of what Twitter is, it's all kinds of your behaviors. It's all kinds of your opinions. But particularly on Twitter, tying your political speech to your bank account makes me nervous. I'll put it that way. I mean, they can find everything on you now. It's not too hard to identify at the governmental level or whoever wants to find out, to find out where you bank and then look at your transactions on your bank account and look at your Facebook page or your Twitter profile. I guess that's not really hard. There's something about tying these things directly together that creeps me out a tiny bit. And as I said, I'm fully aware that this is some level of paranoia. I mean, I'm a step away from a flip phone. If I didn't need a smartphone for work, I think I'd already be there. But this idea of this becoming, and everything is going to be verified. He's big on verifying people, and this is couched to you in terms of, well, if you say something online, we need to make sure you're a real person. We're combating the bots. Well, that's true, but with verification means a whole lot of tracking and tracing of everything you say as well. The jury's still out. I could be a delusional paranoid. I'm just telling you, I'm going to take a cautious wait and see on this. Yeah. What is it good for? Absolutely nothing. Uh-huh. Yeah. What is it good for? Absolutely nothing. Say it again, y'all. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB here in the Mack Heike Flowood Studios, and it is Friday. Friday at 10 o'clock, we do the same thing every week. We focus in on foreign policy stuff in my segment called False Flag Friday, where I have broken down over the course of years all of the lies and manipulations that have led us to these wars and gotten the American people, a very generous, largely Christian and religious society, to sign off and endorse endless death and mayhem around the world for the power and profit of a political elite and a donor class that benefits from these conflicts. We get nothing from them. And there was a really gross video I ran across this morning. It was Hillary Clinton, who has gained a lot of weight. She is wearing one of these Chairman Mao things. It's obviously to hide her ever-ballooning figure. She looks like Jabba the Hutt sitting there, but it's Hillary Clinton and Condoleezza Rice talking to Jon Stewart and explaining, as much as I could stomach, about how, well, maybe we made some mistakes in Libya. I would imagine the Libyan people would concur with that. They had a popular leader that they liked there who was possibly going to set up an alternative currency to the U.S. dollar. That was his mistake. And instead, the U.S., with NATO allies, essentially bombed them back into the Stone Ages and turned it into an open-air slave market. Now it's a completely failed state. So the bloodthirsty, blood-soaked war criminals, Hillary Clinton and Condoleezza Rice, are on with Jon Stewart. Isn't he a lefty guy? Didn't he care about, doesn't he do a lot of talking about veterans issues? Yet he is talking to two of these people who shipped our brothers and sisters, moms and dads, sons and daughters halfway around the world to fight and die in the sand, killing innocent people. And Jon Stewart's just sitting there letting them apologize for the empire. It was really gross to see. But it's beautiful for its propaganda effort. You got someone from the left and someone on the right, both explaining very calmly with the popular Jon Stewart why they really had to do this destruction halfway around the world to a country that could have never laid a finger on us in any way, shape, or form. Anyway, really gross. A couple of quotes of the day. At first, I thought this was sarcastic. It hit me in a weird way. But the Libertarian Party tweeted out this: the military exists to protect citizens, not to expand the empire. Period. They're exactly right. That is the opposite now of how we use our military. It's not at all designed to protect us here in the United States, not to protect our borders, not to protect the integrity of the United States, but to expand the empire that benefits people like Condoleezza Rice and Hillary Clinton. And Ron Paul said this: the moral and constitutional obligations of our representatives in Washington are to protect our liberty, not coddle the world, precipitating no-win wars while bringing bankruptcy and economic turmoil to our people. Amen, Dr. Ron Paul. A lot been going on in Ukraine most recently. The potential false flag of the missiles that hit Poland. Poland immediately, along with Ukraine, called for an Article 4 of the NATO treaty. Article 4 is just it's a get-together. It's not military action. That's Article 5, mutual defense of a NATO nation. And for some reason, our founding fathers told us peace and commerce with all nations, entangling alliances with none. We've decided to entangle our alliance with all of Europe, essentially. And if one of them's attacked, even if they provoke the attack, we have to send our troops over there to protect them. NATO should be disbanded immediately, or at the very least, let it be a European defense force and the Americans. We're out. We don't have a dog in that hunt. But this missile that hit Poland and killed two people, immediately Poland and Ukraine started asking, saying, oh, NATO needs to come together. We need to talk about this. This is a problem. You know, this could have been one of those, air quotes here in the studio, mistakes that could have led to World War III. Was it a mistake? This is Scott Ritter. He was on Judge Napolitano's show. It's called Judging Freedom. If you want to, you can subscribe. These videos are usually like 20 minutes long. If you want to, every couple of days, try to keep up with some calm, rational people explaining to you the ins and outs of what's going on in Ukraine, besides our breathless media that tells you that everything Putin does is bad, everything Ukraine does is good, and Putin's getting his butt handed to him in Ukraine. I will say this, too, and I don't know if Scott Ritter gets into this. Within the next month, I believe now, Russia has had, my understanding, is around 80, 82,000 troops in Ukraine. And they have had some setbacks. That's why I like this clip with Judging Freedom on YouTube, because they will tell you, yep, Russia played this badly. They got beat here, but they're winning here. They did this strategically. They did this. They weren't expecting. They didn't prepare properly. I mean, it seems much more objective than anything you get from the mainstream media. But Russia's been fighting with 82,000 people in Ukraine and decimating large parts of Ukraine now. After the bombing of the bridge, after the destruction of Nord Stream 2, Russia started to take the gloves off. Within the next month, Russia is shipping in another 220,000 troops. Think about that for a second. As your media tells you, Russia's tucking tail and running. No. They are currently training, and they announced about a month ago, it's going to take a couple of months of training to get everybody positioned in there. They are adding to their 82,000 with another 220,000 troops going into Ukraine. It's going to be a long winter for the people of Ukraine, and it's incredibly tragic knowing that this is something that could have been solved before it ever started, or in any afternoon since they could have gotten together and ended this war. But when it comes to this attack on Poland, was it a big oopsie? Because it turns out, after they breathlessly reported that Russia has now attacked Poland, which makes no logical sense whatsoever, Russia this is like Assad gassing his own people. These lies, you have to stop and think, does this make logical, strategic sense? Vladimir Putin launches missiles into Ukraine to kill two civilians, and with that act, he would risk bringing the entire world against his military force, bringing all NATO nations together to enter the war formally. The U.S. is already in this war, obviously, but formally send troops into Ukraine to fight. Why would he possibly do that? But the media immediately reported that. Luckily, some independent media in Poland said, let's hold on a second. This doesn't appear to be a Russian missile. So was it just a big oopsie, an errant Ukrainian missile, or did they try to get NATO involved?
Create a conversation to prevent escalation to nuclear conflict. But right now, the United States is trying to identify what conditions are set by Russia for the end of this conflict. I think Russia's made it clear, demilitarization, denazification, and NATO out of Ukraine, nothing's going to change. And I think Burns is relaying that to Zelensky and adding the fact that, hey, next month, remember you showed the clip where Zelensky was saying, we've won, we're winning. Enjoy the moment, President Zelensky. Enjoy.
All right, let me
you have about 30 days before 220,000 Russian troops show up, and you ain't got a solution to that.
Okay. I was going to ask you that simple question that I usually ask you at the beginning, but you're so smart, Major. You answered it already.
I'm sorry, Judge.
220,000 Russian troops are about to enter the theater of war. So Ukraine has not won, and Ukraine is not going to win. And the statement we saw was propaganda value, I guess. He had his troops there, and he had some jubilant locals there. You could hear them chanting and screaming in the background. Are you still of the view that the evacuation of Kherson was strategic and it wasn't a surrender at all? And President Putin knows that.
Well, I mean, first of all, let's be honest. They had to do it because they were in a difficult military situation. They were in a situation that if they had attempted to retain the Kherson bridgehead, they would have suffered losses. And the Russian military was like, we don't need to die for this territory right now. We can pull back because in a month, we got 10 to 15 divisions showing up. And the game is over at that point in time. So why sacrifice 3,000 guys now when we can save their lives? And this thing's going to be resolved next month when a new reality is created.
Okay. Within hours of President Zelensky making that comment, a missile fired by, we don't know, manufactured by, we don't know, aimed at, we don't know, landed in a small Polish village and killed two people, not military people, as far as we know. A big uproar. And then, of course, the uproar died down because the Western media has persuaded everybody that this was a mistake. It was an error. It was probably the Ukraines trying to shoot down a Russian missile. Here's what President Zelensky had to say to his equivalent of his National Security Council after he received two reports that contradict what the Western media is now claiming.
I'm going to skip that part just because for purpose of it, it's subtitled number one. Number two, it's hard to understand Zelensky. Essentially, he said, well, we need to be involved in this investigation to see exactly what's going on. I think that it, I don't know, you'd have to look at him and see. It feels like it's one of these things where we need to get involved in the cover-up of this thing pretty immediately. You know, we need to find out exactly what's going on. But I wanted Scott Ritter here, who has been one of these guys that's been going around the world. I think he's a former Marine, certainly former military, and he was one of these people going around and inspecting weapons sites. He understands the nature of war, and he'll explain what could have possibly happened with these missiles.
All right. Here's what he's saying. It wasn't the Ukrainian missile, and the Poles who are investigating need to have us a part of the investigation. What are your sources, or what does your instinct tell you that is all about? Who shot it? How did it get there? What's the truth?
Well, let's start with basic facts. Two Polish citizens died. So if you're right. The Polish government, you have to launch an investigation into what is in effect murder, because Poland's not at war. Somebody killed these two citizens. Who did it? A missile landed in Poland that killed these two citizens. That missile, we now know, is a Ukrainian S-300 surface-to-air missile. We know this. The serial numbers on it, everything points to Ukraine. Russia doesn't have that missile. NATO admits that they tracked this missile all the way into Poland. NATO knows where it was launched from. We know everything about this. Trust me, I used to do this for a living. When that missile was launched, we know it. When the radars were turned on, we know it. We know it's a Ukrainian missile. We know it impacted on Polish soil. That's why the president's telling Zelensky, stop this nonsense of denying. We know the truth. Now, Zelensky may be in a situation where he's being told that it wasn't his. And I'll tell you why I believe this might be the case. There are elements of the Ukrainian military that realize, because let's put it in the context of why this missile was launched. Ukraine was getting the snot kicked out of it by 90 Russian missiles that were knocking out their electrical infrastructure and their gas production. Ukraine's going into the dark ages. And the Ukrainian military knows there's nothing they can do to stop this unless NATO intervenes. They need NATO to set up a no-fly zone over Ukraine. That would be their salvation. So to do this, somebody in the Ukrainian military, I believe, launched this missile at Poland. Why? Because the Russian missiles are coming in from the east to the west. The way surface-to-air missiles work is you have a big radar that detects this. Then you have a little radar up front that guides a missile fired from west to east to intercept the missile. This missile went from east to west into Poland. How does that happen? And how does it do it on a ballistic trajectory? I know from my experience that you take it to make a surface-to-air missile a ballistic missile. You point a radar point in the sky. The missile guides on it and then goes to a ballistic trajectory down. Somebody in Ukraine painted the sky over Poland with a radar signature that sent a missile to Polish territory. That's the only way that missile gets to Poland. The only way.
So this is very similar to what happened in Syria. When the Assad government in Syria, when they called in and asked the Russians to come help them from the onslaught of the radical jihadists that the U.S. State Department and CIA were funding to destroy their country, when these radical jihadists were being beat by Russia and the Assad government, they staged false flags, gassed people, and in one particular case, pretended to gas people. And then the world demanded action, and that's when Trump, two times, bombed, sent cruise missiles into Syria. Because the terrorists knew they were losing. The radical jihadists, backed by the United States and other Western countries, knew they were losing. And so they needed to create something to bring in American firepower against the Russians and the Assad regime. The Ukrainian government knows it's losing. They're getting, as he said, the snot kicked out of them. And so what they did was try to launch missiles into Poland to make it appear that Russia did it so that NATO would come to their defense. Like I say, I wish they would at least have a little bit of creativity. They keep doing the same thing over and over again, but I guess it's because it continues to work. When I come back, I got one other clip from this, and I think one of the short-sighted things of Americans, I love this country. We could be such a fantastic country. We certainly were. The way the rest of the world views us, if you listen to our government, we're the indispensable nation. Everybody looks to us for our, air quotes here in the studio, American leadership. I'm telling you, the world is lining up not around the idea of loving America and wanting our help. They are lining up on the other side of that ledger. I'll explain that when we come back. Every time something happens in the world, the U.S. rushes out to condemn the violence. It's quite amazing. A government that has been responsible for more deaths probably in the last 20 years alone than Nazis, Germany's Hitler, always condemns violence when it's perpetrated by somebody else. Now, a lot of people are waking up to this war issue. I love to see it, most notably on the right, beautifully. But the left has gone back to sleep on this. They were sold war by Barack Obama. They have yet to recover. Some of them are. I've seen some protests, some lefties going to Ocasio-Cortez things, a great Bernie Sanders protester. These are people on the left. Some of them, former Bernie bros, are screaming at Bernie Sanders in public about his support for this Ukraine war. But the right is waking up. There's a few remnants of the anti-war left still out there. But it shouldn't be hard at this point to realize we're getting nothing from this. And it's actually worse than that. It's not just the sacrifice of innocent people around the world, the sacrifice of our troops, and the bankrupting of our country. But it is starting to really tick a few people off. There was a bombing in Turkey. And so the U.S. government does what it does. It stands in solidarity with the country of Turkey and condemns the horrific violence. It doesn't matter how many wars we're involved in, the fact we're sacrificing the Ukrainians right now in a proxy war with Russia. None of that matters. They stand against this violence. Here's what Turkey responded. Turkey lashed out at Washington, going so far as to suggest the United States was to blame for the blast. Quote, Turkey's interior minister accused the U.S. of being complicit in a recent bombing in the city of Istanbul on Sunday that left at least six people dead and dozens other injured. The accusation was prompted by an official condolence statement from the U.S. embassy in Ankara. Interior Minister Suleyman Soylu said in a dramatic press conference that Turkey has rejected the condolence statement from Washington. Quote, I emphasize once again that we do not accept and reject the condolences of the U.S. Embassy. This Soylu, Interior Minister, said he slammed the U.S. statement as being akin to, quote, a killer being first to show up at a crime scene. That's a NATO ally of ours. This is Scott Ritter. I've got two things here you should listen to about the way the rest of the world is starting to view the United States. It's not starting to view the United States. We've just finally pushed them too far.
all of this is part of your view of a bigger disease, a disease of the mind in Western diplomats and particularly American diplomats, that America has the God-given right to control the world and can finance puppets to fight for that control and then can tell those puppets what kind of government they should establish. I mean, you've told us many times, Phil Giraldi has, Colonel McGregor, that this war started in 2014, and it started by the CIA fomenting a revolution against the popularly elected, albeit pro-Russian, government. Do you accept everything that I've just said as a fair summary of your views? And if you do, can you take the ball and run with it?
I do accept that. I mean, I accuse America of being infected with the disease of hubris, national hubris, the arrogance that comes with that. Read the National Security Strategy document that was just published by the Biden administration and look at the emphasis it's played on the rules-based international order. Then ask yourself, what is the rules-based international order? It's not international law set forth by the United Nations Charter. It's a bunch of side agreements and deals that the United States cut with the rest of the world in the aftermath of the Second World War to imbue us, the United States, with total power and authority over everything the way the world works, especially financial. And so now, because the dollar, especially the petrodollar after the 1970s, touches everything, anything that touches the dollar, we feel we have a right to sanction and control. So we're dictating terms of global existence to the world that doesn't want to be dictated to. And that's where we're running into right now. The world is starting to get tired of American hegemony. They're tired of the arrogance. We call ourselves the exceptional nation. We say that the world cannot function without us. Well, the world's getting ready to say, watch us.
Amen. And there was somebody else, and I'm kicking myself. I did not write down who this was, but I've got this. This is somebody talking about this. You'll hear this a lot, particularly out of the Biden administration. The rules-based order. And we're the ones that set the rules. Essentially what this is we tell you what to do, and if you don't do it, you're violating the rules-based order.
President Zelensky comes to his senses.
Sorry. Here we go.
They don't tell you what the rules are. Even gone further than just ignoring United Nations Charter and principles of international law, they now claim there's this, you know, this phrase, this rules-based order, which is separate from that. And when you ask them, what is this? What do you mean, rules-based order? What rules? They don't tell you what the rules are. Whose rules? They don't tell you whose rules. What are these rules? Well, it's quite clear the only two rules are, what two? You will do whatever the United States says, and if you don't, we will crush you. Those are the two rules. But that's not international law. That's international gangsterism. That's the thinking of gangsters, of mafia. And the word sanctions, they try to justify their economic wars by calling them sanctions. But how can the United States or any other country sanction China, sanction Russia, Venezuela or Iran, whatever? They can't. They're all illegal.
And they're acts of war. Sanctions are acts of war. And this is what the U.S. has been doing. Our government, with our name stamped on it, and unfortunately the complicity of just about everybody in the country who has just sat back and allowed this to happen, well, between what's happening with the BRICS nations and them getting together and setting up their little parallel financial system that is going to dramatically harm the U.S. petrodollar, all that luxury, the privilege that we've been given with this for the past 70 years, the clock is ticking on that thing. The world has had it with the United States. Like the bully on the playground, eventually, one day, the kids wake up and they realize, you know, if we all got together, the guy's big, but if we all get together, I think we can take him down. When you've got Turkey, a NATO ally, rejecting our condolences, when you've got Russia, China, India, Brazil, Saudi Arabia, all forming another alliance, you're going to find out exactly the price we're going to pay for all of this bullying that we've allowed our presidents and our governments to do. Right. All right, time to finish up the week. Can't believe it's Friday already. This week sailed by, but we do it the same way every single Friday as we chronicle the world's descent into madness with this segment this week on the Crazy Train. I had several clips on this with the FTX meltdown, the cryptocurrency exchange implosion that we've seen. A lot of very famous people, a lot of money is going to be lost on this thing. But for the just in the past year, a lot of celebrities have signed their name onto a lot of this crypto stuff. And FTX was the, I think, the all-star of celebrity endorsements. This is going to be a problem for them going forward.
This morning, Tom Brady is among the A-list celebrities being sued for promoting the failed crypto company FTX.
What do you think? Are you in?
You know what? I'm in.
Last year, Brady and his then-wife Gisele Bündchen appeared in this ad for the crypto exchange, which filed for bankruptcy last week after, at one point, being valued at $30 billion. And Brady isn't the only big name at the center of the new class-action lawsuit, accusing FTX's founder and its brand ambassadors of deceptively targeting unsophisticated investors in what the lawsuit describes as a Ponzi scheme.
This is Steph Curry, the world's leading expert on cryptocurrency.
I'm not.
Steph Curry, Shaquille O'Neal, and Naomi Osaka are also named as defendants. The lawsuit is seeking to recover part of the $11 billion that lawyers claim was lost by consumers. One other celebrity included in the lawsuit?
It's FTX. It's a safe and easy way to get into crypto.
Yeah, I don't think so. And I'm never wrong about this stuff. Never.
Comedian Larry David, who appeared in a Super Bowl ad for FTX, jokingly warning people not to use the platform. The big names aren't the first to be sued for advertising crypto. Just last month, Kim Kardashian settled with the SEC for more than $1 million after she promoted a cryptocurrency without revealing that she had been paid $250,000 to do so.
I think there's a whole lot of agents being fired right now, for sure. It does seem that Larry David's got a plausible defense, though. He spent the entire commercial poo-pooing the FTX exchange. He warned people. I mean, we know it was tongue-in-cheek, but it's going to be hard to hold him accountable. He'll say, just read the transcript of the commercial. I tried to warn people. Now, speaking of warning people when it comes to FTX, I played this earlier in the week, but people should have known this might not have been the most solid company. Here is the CEO of the partner company, Alameda Research, also tied to this SBF character, Sam Bankman-Fried.
Yeah, absolutely could pull it off without my math degree. Use very little math. Use a lot of like
Again, this is the CEO.
Elementary school math. Being comfortable with risk is very important. We tend not to have things like stop losses. I think those aren't necessarily a great risk management tool. I'm trying to think of a good example of a trade where I've lost a ton of money. Well, I don't know. I probably don't want to go into specifics too much with that.
That was the CEO. Who could have seen this coming? I liked my longer clip of her where she says like about every fourth word, but I don't have time for it. COVID stuff is still in the news. Australia, never too late to make another bad decision, as I say.
Just as South Australians were looking ahead at a clear run to Christmas, the COVID cloud is looming again. The police commissioner fronting a parliamentary inquiry, and when asked if he's confident of a normal Christmas...
And there may be some people who, because of the fact that they have cold and flu symptoms, maybe need to step aside from those normal Christmas gatherings that we tend to look forward to.
Last week, South Australian cases doubled to almost 7,000. That number tipped to keep rising. Today, SA Health stepped up the mask-wearing message, now strongly recommending their use in crowded indoor settings and on public transport. That's on top of the requirement in healthcare settings and if you're with vulnerable people. For anyone over 30, a fourth vaccination is also recommended. As far as the return of restrictions is concerned, the Premier says that won't happen under his watch.
So they're back to the masks, and they say if you're over 30 years old, it's time to get your fourth shot. Let's see, and remember, in Australia, 96% of the population is vaccinated, and at the reporting a few weeks ago, at least 72% of them were boosted. Let's see how that's working out for them.
In Australia, a Carnival cruise ship docked in Sydney, and it has some 800 passengers on board who have tested positive for the coronavirus.
What?
Health officials say they're isolating on the ship and getting medical treatment. And they rated the outbreaks, officials rated the outbreak's risk level at Tier 3, indicating a high level of transmission. This is officials sought to reassure the public that COVID precautions are in place. There were around 4,600 people on board the Majestic Princess, which means about 1 in 5 tested positive. The outbreak comes as COVID-19 cases are rising across Australia.
Huh. 96% vaxxed, 72% boosted at least, and they're docking cruise ships with massive outbreaks and cases are rising. Here in the United States, I did want to do this as a PSA. We're heading into the holiday season. It's time to get our marching orders for how we can celebrate the holidays here.
Dr. Azar, Thanksgiving is less than 2 weeks away, so should families think twice about getting together for these big gatherings? And if they do decide to move forward with those plans, what are precautions you can take?
Yeah, you know, Joe, it's hard. This is our third COVID holiday. It's, you know, you almost can lose track. What I think the best and...
Oh, no, we're keeping score. Don't worry. We'll keep score for you.
Safest approach for everyone is to plan your holidays around the most vulnerable person.
Okay, I meant to pause this clip. Has everybody got a piece of paper and something to write with? A pen or a pencil? I know that Americans, we've been trained now, you need to jot down exactly how you can participate in the holidays now. Make sure you're taking notes.
Approach for everyone is to plan your holidays around the most vulnerable person in your household. Keeping that in mind, things that you can do to stay safe. Of course, you want a rapid test for COVID before a gathering. Make sure everyone who is eligible in your household is up to date on their flu shots and their COVID boosters. And if you can, still works. Hold your event outside. If you're inside, make sure it's well ventilated. Just precautions that we've been kind of drilling down for the last couple of years, but will still hold true for this holiday season, Joe and Kristen.
Boy, those people up in Buffalo, apparently they're going to have to shovel out about 6 feet of snow to be able to hold their Thanksgiving outdoors this year. Thank God I am having my Thanksgiving this year with some non-crazies. Here was one. The retribution if you went against the COVID regime. Pretty severe stuff.
And in other news, Missouri doctor Eric Naputi could face a civil penalty of more than $500
billion. $500
billion.
This is a civil penalty for going against the COVID regime. Listen to what he dared to tell his patients.
And in other news, Missouri doctor Eric Naputi could face a civil penalty of more than $500 billion. The Federal Trade Commission has sued him for violating the COVID-19 Consumer Protection Act. The complaint alleges that the St. Louis chiropractor profited from selling vitamin D and zinc products online while promoting those drugs as a treatment or prevention against COVID-19. The government's lawsuit says such claims lack scientific merit and says Naputi took advantage of people's pandemic fears. But the doctor says the government is only targeting him because he sought other treatments for COVID-19 instead of the vaccine. He says they want to make an example out of him. According to the CDC, vitamin D does help the immune system fight off bacteria and viruses. The case will stand trial in a Missouri federal court in March.
And zinc inhibits the reproduction of virus. So the guy did vitamin D and zinc is what he recommended to his patients. Those kinds of recommendations will harm nobody. And $500 billion judgment is what they're going for after a chiropractor. Never face off against the regime. I hope they weren't listening to my show for all of 2020 and 2021. Be right back.
From all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees. So will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, final segment for the week. Today's a big day for me. Today is Stonington Farm Beef Delivery Day. They are now bringing up small orders for people. I don't have room, or I'm a single dude. Can't eat a half cow in any reasonable amount of time. So now Stonington Farm is delivering enough beef up to the Jackson area that once, twice a month, they're going to be coming up here with smaller shipments. So you can get Mississippi-born, raised, and processed beef, raised with no hormones, no antibiotics, and fed with grass. It is the best nutritional profile meat you're probably going to find out there, and the prices are as good, if not better, than the sweatshop cows you're eating from the grocery store. You can check them out at stoningtonfarm.com. That's S-T-O-N-N-I-N-G-T-O-N, stoningtonfarm.com. You'll see everything they offer, and you're going to call a number and talk to probably Katie Stonington, the rancher herself, and find out what you want to order. It's a great operation. You're supporting a local-owned independent farm and with the best profile meat you can find. Again, it's stoningtonfarm.com. I'll be picking my meat up today at 4 o'clock. I forgot to throw this in with this week on the crazy train for COVID. Here's from the Daily Mail UK. You're, all caps, more likely to get COVID again within weeks if you take Pfizer's Paxlovid drug, early study indicates. COVID patients who use Paxlovid are twice as likely to suffer an infection rebound. Holy cow. If only they'd studied it for longer than a couple of weeks. Let's see what we got here. Well, Trump kind of sucked a lot of the oxygen out of the room, as he's wont to do over the past week, but it didn't stop Biden from making one really stupid statement.
I think the context is that whether or not they're pulling back from Fallujah and Kherson, the city of Kherson.
These blood-soaked war monsters can't keep their wars. They're responsible for so much death. They can't keep them all straight. This is the VP. I want you, the funniest part about this, check out the enthusiastic applause at the end of this line.
Back when I was Attorney General of California and then as a United States Senator, we fought to protect the health and well-being of our veterans and service members. And as Vice President, I am proud to serve alongside one of the greatest champions of our nation's warriors, our President Joe Biden.
I guess they need an applause sign, I guess. Well, that statement did not engender a whole lot of enthusiasm, did it? Oh, the Idiocracy prophecy is almost complete. Katie Turr has got a way to take us into this the Idiocracy prophecy in full. This is Katie Turr with NBC.
Fetterman, as a nominee at some point for president, I know there's some variables, obviously.
Yes, she's talking about the Fetterman who just got elected in Pennsylvania as a nominee for president of the United States.
Fetterman, as a nominee at some point for president, I know there's some variables, obviously.
Just a few.
But I just, you know... What he did in the super red, deep red parts of Pennsylvania and the way that he ran ahead of Biden, as you were saying, ran ahead of Trump, I mean, it just makes you wonder about his future.
I'm telling you, Idiocracy, it's a prophecy. If you haven't seen the movie, you might want to tune in and know what's up next. Now, let's not make any mistakes. The GOP has their idiots as well. This is Trump-backed Bo Hines. He was running for a North Carolina House seat.
Is it going to be real? Are we actually going to be willing to defund IRS, FBI, and things of that nature?
Well, I mean, we have to. I mean, we're at a point in our country now where we have a unregulated fourth branch of government that's targeting middle-class Americans on a daily basis. I mean, it's unbelievable what we're seeing. You know, a lot of people have likened the situation that's going on right now as, you know, they say we're in a banana republic. I think that's an insult to banana republics across the country. I mean, at least the manager of Banana Republic, unlike our president, knows where he is and why he's there and what he's doing.
So the guy thinks the term banana republic refers to the mall outlet store. This is a video, and the interviewer, I was just looking, he played it pretty cool, but he had to have started to realize where this guy was going, thinking that Banana Republic refers to the retail store. I would have furrowed my brow like, what the hell are you talking about? So the GOP has got its idiots too. There's no doubt about that. This was, we get into some of the climate stuff. The green weenies, they're out there doing their crazy stuff.
The actor who played Dwight on The Office is changing his name.
Rainn Wilson is trying to raise awareness about climate change, so Rainn has changed his name to Rainfall, Heatwave, Rising Sea Levels Wilson.
Oh, Dwight. Dwight. Oh, please stop. Let's see. They've got some plans for us here. This has made some news recently when it comes to climate change. I'm going to do something about that next week. Not something about climate change. That's obviously nothing you can do about that. It's the universe. We're going to do some topics on this. Been a lot of globalist meetings lately, and there's some real weird stuff coming out of these things we're not paying attention to. But this is the World Economic Forum with their new plan.
We're developing, through technology, an ability for consumers to measure their own carbon footprint. What does that mean?
Yeah.
That's, where are they traveling? How are they traveling? What are they eating? What are they consuming on the platform? So, individual carbon footprint tracker.
Mm.
Stay tuned. We don't have it operational yet, but this is something that we're working on.
Yeah, good luck with that. No thanks. In Brooklyn.
Sound heard through parts of Fort Greene. Brooklyn has been driving some people, we are told, crazy.
Yeah, it's maddening, it's unsettling, and it's also just this mystery because nobody seems to know what is causing this strange humming sound. CBS 2's Kevin Rincon gives us a listen.
It's profoundly annoying.
As you hear the noise, it's hard to make out what it is.
It sounds like somebody putting their finger on a glass cup and running it around the top of the cup.
It sounds very much like a resonance, a harmonic resonance, like if you can picture someone rubbing the top of a crystal glass or a tuning fork.
What does it sound?
Mo Hussein, he took video walking home one night. He's noticed the sound for over a year.
I liken it to like some sort of alien invasion. As you're walking around, even in the middle of the night, you hear this hum off in the background and you wonder what could that be?
Yeah. So maybe that's what's driving all the New Yorkers crazy with the people that they keep electing in that state. Well, I don't know. Just another weirdness in today's wacky world. That's all the time I got. Hope everybody has a fantastic weekend, and I'll talk to you on Monday.
No
Bye-bye.
Matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.